I want you to join me in Genesis chapter number 6 today. We are talking about the flood which changed the world. It is probably the thing that best explains why things are the way they are today, both in our physical world and in our own physical bodies. Death and decay and all of those things started because of Adam and Eve's sin. But all of that was very slowly going downhill at the beginning. Just some changes happening in the human genetic code through mutations, a little bit of decay within the world itself. Once, though, the flood comes along, everything picks up its pace. Before the flood, the average lifespan of humans was still up into the 900s. So the nutrition seems to have been pretty good coming off the face of the land, even though it was cursed. And something about the atmosphere must have kept humanity healthier for longer. Once the flood happens, the lifespan radically dips down into a normal range of 60, 70, 80, and an upward limit right around 120. And that comes up in these first few verses of chapter 6 as an introduction to the flood. Now, some of these things I already talked about in detail yesterday, particularly about the interaction between the fallen angels, that would be the sons of men, or sons of God in this passage, and the daughters of men. I don't want to spend a lot of time on that today. I just want to kind of talk about it a little bit in relationship to the flood and move on. If you're interested, you should go back and check out yesterday's episode, episode number 18. So let's start at Genesis chapter 6, verse 1, and move forward. It says, "When man began to multiply on the face of the land, and daughters were born to them." So the be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth, make it your home. All of that is happening over several hundred years, up into the, probably getting, by the time Noah was born, about 1600 years. Verse 2, "The sons of God, the B'nai Ha-Elohim, the angelic fallen beings, saw that the daughters of men were attractive," or specifically, good for use. "And they took as their wives," or the language is not as marriage specific as that. "They took these women, any of them that they choose." All right? So that it almost feels like abductions going on here. There might have been some volunteers. That's a possibility. Some of the old legends and things like that talk in that nature. But it's not for a good cause here. These fallen angels are looking to compromise mankind into their way of doing things. It's still part of the coup. Verse 3, "Then he who is," that would be God the Creator, "said, my spirit shall not abide in man forever, for he is flesh. His days shall be 120 years. And I believe this is not talking about the period of time it took to build the ark, but rather this is God predicting that after the flood occurs, the lifespan, which is currently in the 900s by average, is going to precipitously drop off until 120 is pretty much the upper limit. And we know that that is the case in our world today. Now, verse 4 introduces another strange subject to our ears. It says the Nephilim. And that is a Hebrew word. It's in the plural form. That's the I-M on the end. But it comes from a verb that means to fall. And this appears to be a reference to these fallen angels again, the sons of God, up in verse number 2. The Greek is going to insert the word earthborn here, which is gigantes, or as we have brought it into our language, giants. And that seems to be more of a reference to the offspring of this hybridization program, because these guys are born on the earth. They are born from angelic interaction with the humans who live on the earth. So the Nephilim were on the earth in those days and also afterward. Now that's important because we have giant problems before the flood right here. And then we will discover there are giant problems after the flood. So this appears to be just the first of a couple of different attempts to compromise the human genome by the fallen angels. I suggested to you yesterday that Sodom and Gomorrah may be a place where that happened, and it might be one of the reasons for the destruction there, the utter destruction. The other thing seems to be the more modern incidents where people report having alien abductions. And these aliens, strangely enough, seem to be interested in gathering genetic material for their purposes. Very, very strange, but I find it rather shockingly parallel to the passage here in Genesis chapter 6. So the Nephilim were on the earth in those days, also afterward, when the sons of God came in to the daughters of man, and they bore children to them. These were the mighty men who were of old, the men of renown. So there are famous stories revolving around these gigantes, these giants. And some of the stories of the gods and goddesses of the ancient world, some of the stories of the heroes and the demigods, things like Inki or Hercules. Some of these stories may relate back to these hybrid persons who were a cross between the fallen angels and mankind. And they were trouble. It is pretty much the universal opinion in the legends of the world, in the stories of all the different cultures, that divine beings played around with the human genome at some point, and that the offspring from this activity became problems. And the senior gods decided to do away with them. And typically the story says they flooded them out of existence. And usually only a select human individual or family survived that judgment. Now that sounds very much like the flood of Noah. And as I mentioned in our introduction to the book of Genesis, I believe the book of Genesis is a corrective document. The Israelites had spent 430 years in Egypt, and they had lost connections with their past, with Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph. And I think they needed to have all the bad information that had been pumped into them by the culture of Egypt fixed. And so they needed to know the origins of the universe from God's perspective. They needed to know the origins of how things got screwed up by sin. They needed to know their true history, where they fit in the family of mankind. So that's why the genealogies are here. And they needed to know the big events of history that shaped this world. And so here is Moses providing the details of how the world became so full of sin because of the interventive actions of these fallen angels that God decided to start fresh. Verse number 5. He who is saw the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. You might remember that we talked about the Cain line and how we follow his family tree until we get to a guy by the name of Lamech, who is about the seventh generation member since creation. And then he is involved in polygamy. He seems to be involved in possibly murder, certainly killing somebody just because of anger over what that person had done to him. And he has a really bad attitude, a very self-centered attitude. I think it is more than likely that the angelic intervention that is mentioned here at the beginning of chapter 6, happened roughly at the same time. And that what was already happening, that is, the generations were starting to get more and more rebellious to the Creator, the intervention of the fallen angels sped that process up. Because you might remember one of the other things that is mentioned with Lamech is that some of his offspring were the, quote, fathers of, end quote, certain technologies or certain types of lifestyles. The extra-biblical traditions and histories say that the fallen angels didn't just simply monkey around with the genome, they also started providing all sorts of advice and counsel as to how mankind should live and act, and even gave information ahead of what mankind would have discovered it. And so I think the rot of mankind morally started picking up speed right around the time of Lamech in the seventh generation from Adam on the Cain side, and right around the time of Enoch in the seventh generation from Adam on the Seth side. And Enoch, we know, was a prophet, and in the book of Jude, he actually predicts how everything is going to terminate in judgment because of the wickedness of ungodly people. So the description we see in Genesis chapter 6, verse 5, I believe describes the last three generations before the flood. That by the time you get to that terminal generation, there are no good people around. Pretty much everybody's just trying to come up with a new way to stick their thumb in God's eye, to flip God off, to take advantage of other people, to murder, maim, rape, pillage, do whatever it takes to get the thing they want, and they don't care about anybody else. So it is bad. Except for one guy and his family that catches God's eye. We'll get to him in a moment. Verse number 6. And he who is was sorry that he'd made man on the earth, and it grieved him to his heart. Now, the phrase here that he was sorry, it's not that he changed his mind. And I think some of the older versions actually use that English word repent there. The word is apparently an onomatopoeia. It's a word that sounds like what it's trying to express. And it's actually a heavy sigh of exasperation. God was that exasperated parent whose children had gone off the rails. And it frustrated him that he was now going to have to intervene because it was out of control. And it hurt his heart that he was going to have to do that. And so what is his plan? Verse number 7 describes that. So he who is said, I will blot out man, and that means mankind, whom I have created from the face of the land, man and animals and creeping things and birds of the heavens, for I am sorry that I have made them. And that's that sigh there again. Now the mention of doing away with the animals should catch our attention here. Because some of the non-biblical legends and traditions are that the divine beings, the fallen angels, and mankind that had been corrupted by them had started monkeying around with the genetic code of the animals as well. That they had started making monsters of that which God had created to be a blessing. Something beautiful. And so everything has to be reset. Now, this idea of the monsters might be the ultimate source for some of the chimera stories that come through the mythologies of other cultures, where you bring the characteristics of one particular animal into the characteristics of another animal, and you end up with something totally different and very weird and sometimes very, very dangerous. I find this also interesting because what is happening today on planet Earth? We have some scientists, some of them that have much less moral control than others, monkeying around with the animal genome and even suggesting that they could make the chimeras of the past with the abilities that they are getting through technologies like CRISPR. That's a little scary, folks. And so it might be another indication that we are at the end of time. That God's judgment is about to fall just as it did with the flood, but this time with fire. And so I just lay that out there for you to consider. It might be another sign of our problems. Back to the text. So all the humans on planet Earth are really messed up. God says, I'm going to have to wipe out everything that's alive, all the animals and people, because they are just so far out of whack. But, verse 8 says, Noah found favor in the eyes of he who is. So on planet Earth at that time, there was one member of the human race that was clearly still in God's court, still seeking God's face. And he was named Noah. Now, his wife was probably in that same sort of mindset. And then they have three sons that are still living in the home, even though they are all probably in their upper 100 time period. They are at about a century old, each of them. But back in that time, it appears that you didn't get married, you didn't leave your household of your parents until you were into your second century. So these guys are all engaged, shall we say, to three unnamed women. And this group of eight, God decides to use as his starter batch to replenish the earth. Verse number 9, these are the generations of Noah. That's our word toledoth again, the Genesis word, the word that indicates we're in a certain section of the story here. Noah was a righteous man, blameless in his generation. Now, I've always understood this in my earlier years as being a moral reference, that he was a blameless individual in his particular generation of people. Blameless in the sense that he's not sinless, but rather even when he does sin, he regrets it and tries to fix the relationship between him and God in the appropriate fashion of repentance and the offering of an animal substitute sacrifice. But it has come to my attention in the teaching of certain leaders in the current time period that this might be a reference to the genome as well. That he was blameless in his genetic code, meaning his genetic code was still unaltered by all of the fallen angel garbage that was going on. And I find that thinking of interest. I don't know that that's true, but I do find it an interesting thesis, given all the things that we were just talking about. And that this might be the reason he was selected in particular is because his family line, the Seth family line, had never been compromised by the fallen angels' activities. But the next phrase is clearly a moral reference. Noah walked with God. The last person that we heard described in that way was Enoch, who was transformed, who was taken away into probably the far future. So Noah walked in a godly fashion. Verse 10, Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. More about them after the flood. Verse 11, now the earth was corrupt in God's sight. The earth was filled with violence. God saw the earth. Behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way on the earth. So that's a moral standard. They are thumbing God in the eye. They are flipping him off. They are saying, you're not the boss of me. I don't have to do what you say. They didn't care. They were rebels against God. But there might also be a reference back to the monkeying around with the genetics by the fallen angels, that everybody had this fallen angel genetic material in their family tree, and they'd many of them been compromised by the connection with these rebel angels and the teaching, the false teaching that those rebel angels were injecting into human society by their close proximity to it. And that's another one of the reasons why when the flood comes, God takes those fallen angels and puts them into Taurus, because they have caused a huge amount of trouble for mankind, and they did not need to be allowed to keep running loose on the landscape in the new world. Verse 13, God said to Noah, I have determined to make an end of all flesh, for the earth is filled with violence through them. Behold, I will destroy them from the earth. So he brings the 600-year-old Noah into his confidence and tells him, I've got a plan to start fresh. I am going to destroy all of humanity and the animal world that is associated with them, and then I'm going to start over again. And this is what you, Noah, need to do to participate in this effort. Verse 14, make yourself an ark of gopher wood. Now, gopher, nobody knows for sure what that word means in Hebrew. The Greek Old Testament, the Septuagint, treated it as if it were some sort of prepared lumber. But again, we don't know. So make yourself this big box boat out of this particular type of wood. Make rooms, the word literally means nests or little places, in this ark and cover it inside and out with pitch. So you're going to make a great big container. You are going to subdivide it into places where humans and animals can be, and you're going to waterproof it. And then he starts giving the dimensions, and we'll come back to all of these tomorrow. This is how you are to make it. The length of the ark, 300 cubits. Its breadth, 50 cubits. Its height, 30 cubits. Now, a cubit is typically, in our thinking, from the elbow to the tip of the middle finger on an average adult male, which is about 18 inches in our modern thinking. And my cubit happens to be exactly 18 inches. But we know that the ancient world had a longer cubit than that, which might indicate taller humans in the past. When we come back tomorrow and start talking about the design of this ark, I'm going to warn you ahead of time, we're going to use the longer cubit so that this ark is going to be even bigger than most Bible commentaries describe it. So read ahead a little bit and come back tomorrow and we'll get back into God's Word.